minute. So here we are today. We're in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, and we're going to be looking at verses 1 to 14. Now, I'm going to need help with the PowerPoint there, Dominic, because I just have one battery here today, and I don't think that's going to run this thing. So unless Mallory finds me another one. See if this thing can work half-heartedly. No, it doesn't. Okay. So we're continuing our journey through 1 Corinthians. And again, three sermons on the same subject now turned into four. So now we're three quarters of the way through this thing. And for all of you who have been listening, we're talking about the issue of meat sacrificed to idols and Gentile Christians wanting to go back to the pagan temples. Oh, here we go. Thank you. Let's see if this fixes it. It's always good to have good, you know, good Christian friends who do this kind of stuff, you know? Shame themselves before everybody just to help you out. Okay. Let's see if it okay. Hey, Mallory, can you do me a favor and see if the USB is there and plug that in for me? Let's see, we're gonna get it. Okay, so until then, we have half of it working. So there's these Gentile Christians. They have the option where they don't have to eat meat sacrificed to idols, but there's this problem where they want to, and they want to go back to the temples again. And the reason why is not just because they're bad people or can't listen or something like that. Do you guys remember why they wanted to go back? What's that? You can say it out loud.
Friends,
there you go. A big part is their friends, okay? Because that's their whole life. That's where they participate in what they would call fellowship, okay? That's also where you do business meetings in the ancient world. That's where the restaurants are. So that's the whole life that I'm used to, okay? So what was their argument as to why they should be allowed to go back there? Does anyone remember this? Yeah, there's nothing there anyway. Right? There's no God there. We know there's one God, so we go to this place. It's just a restaurant. It's just an auditorium. There's no God present. I don't understand, Paul. What's the big deal? It would be really odd for me to not advance my business and my friendships just because of a God who exists in somebody's imagination. You know, so it's like the tooth fairy is going to prevent me from doing this thing. That doesn't make any sense, Paul. Okay? And next slide. Oh, I can do it. Okay, here we go. In chapter 8, we looked and, you know, I made this point that though these people were believing that it was about their knowledge that was going to keep them accountable, right? It was going to make sure that nothing bad happened to them in these pagan temples. And I was saying that's just oh so Roman of them, right? Because in the Roman world, you just think, well, nothing bad's going to happen to me. Sure, they maybe abuse slave girls there, but it's not happening to me. What's the big deal? Right? I have knowledge. I know there's no gods there. So Paul implores them to think of, listen, because you're a Christian now, you need to start thinking about what will happen to other people. And he explains to them that having true knowledge for a Christian is having the knowledge of love and being concerned with far more than just myself and my own gain. Okay? You guys remember in Philippians, Paul says this thing about do nothing out of selfish ambition, okay? In the Roman world, everything was about selfish ambition, okay? So Paul is coming against this. Now, the problem is if they don't go to these temples, what's going to happen to them? They're going to lose business. They're going to lose friendship. Their business associates are going to question them and their loyalty. And it's going to really mess up their lives. And part of what they stand on is that they have rights as a Roman citizen to do business for selfish ambition, for their advancement. And so are they just supposed to give up their rights? And you guys remember what Alan said about that? It was yes. Okay? So Paul faces them head on, as Alan said. Paul responds by explaining, listen, he has all sorts of rights. He has all these rights as an apostle, all the kinds of things that he could do. But because he knows this God that he's come to know in Jesus, he gives up his rights. You know that Paul's a Roman citizen? You guys remember when Alan said that he took all these lashes right? Five times the 39, that thing. Did you know that as a Roman citizen, Paul never had to be lashed even once? Because the Jewish authorities could have said, we're going to do this to you. You say, I'm a Roman citizen. Whoopee-doo. Okay? So Paul actually gave up his right to not be lashed, submitted to Jewish authority, and took beatings. And he did that on purpose because he says he does that out of love. And Paul goes on to say there that he would rather die than go back to living his old Roman way of looking out for himself and his gain and his rights. Okay? So Paul's argument so far with regards to pagan temples and meals there could be stated this way. True knowledge is love. True love gives up its right for the sake of others. Okay, so that's where we're at so far. Okay, well, so okay, maybe you're thinking here, why the heck doesn't Paul just say yes or no? I mean, it'd be that simple, right? I've heard some people said, you know, people are on here, why don't you just say yes or no? Why don't we say yes or no? Maybe you're thinking yes, right? Like, yes, they should be allowed to do this. Maybe you're thinking no. Maybe you're thinking I don't know yet. Maybe you're thinking, why this framework, okay? Why use a framework instead of just saying yes or no, okay? It's because Paul's trying to help the Corinthians to learn how to make decisions for themselves. Can you imagine if he had to say yes or no to them on everything they ever did? They'd just be kids, right? Paul, I'm going to go outside today. Can I? Yes or no, okay? Now, obviously, this is a more complex situation. We're talking about there's messiness to this whole idea of re-engaging in their old life. But Paul needs to teach them how to navigate life for themselves. That's this whole idea where he keeps going on about conscience. Conscience isn't how I feel in my head. Conscience for Paul is how do I make decisions about what's right and wrong. So he's got to develop their conscience so they can navigate the world. And sometimes as Christian people, we just want a bunch of yes, yes and no, right? Yes and no, yes and no. Put everything black and white for me. The problem is you're going to be a child in your faith for the rest of your life. Christianity is about putting character in me so God can say, listen, you're free to choose, right? Because you're going to choose the right way. So, can I just go to the pagan temple and carry on with my old life? This is basically the question, okay? Paul's answer here today, I'm going to try and put it in this point, is his answer is, listen, what you feed on fuels the direction of your life. Okay, so that's my big idea here. You can see it's not a yes or no. Okay, what you feed on is currently fueling the direction of your life. So I'm going to get you to dig into that question and begin to think about that. What do you feed on? Okay, now I broke the passage down into bits this week so people can understand what the heck I was talking about. Okay, so we're going to read it one bit at a time. This is chapter 10, verses 1 to 6. You can follow me on here or in your Bible. For I do not want you to be unaware, brothers and sisters, that our fathers were all under the cloud and all passed through the sea, and all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and all ate the same spiritual food and all drank the same spiritual drink. For they drank from the spiritual rock that followed them, and the rock was Christ. Nevertheless, with most of them, God wasn't pleased, for they were overthrown. This is where we get our English word catastrophe. Okay, they were overthrown. It was a catastrophe in the wilderness. Now, these things took place as examples for us. And I'm showing you that word example, it really means what's typical, okay? Typical examples for us that we might not desire or crave evil as they did. Okay, now, if you've been tracking them, you can see I underlined a few things about ate, food, drank, right? That simply sums it up. And all those words have an association, right? And all, that association is eating and drinking. Okay, it all has to do with table fellowship. So this whole thing revolves around eating and drinking. And Paul's clever, so he knows to pull in all sorts of passages that are about eating and drinking. The Corinthians want to go and eat food to offer to idols because they say it's of no consequence anyway, and they know this. So Paul says to them, listen, okay, let's use an argument for you where we talk about the history of God's people and see how what they feed on affects things. Okay? And he reminds the Corinthians that they, as God's own people, because they've been transferred from Gentiles who are outsiders to insiders, they're part of the people of God now, that means that they're part of the continuation of the grand story of the Bible. Okay? So this would be true for your life as well. You got to know what kind of story you're in. Okay? So Paul says to them, listen, I do not want you to be unaware, brothers and sisters. Don't be unaware of the story you're in, because there's been a lot of food and drink that have tripped up God's people before you. You guys ever heard that saying about history? Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. Okay? So, Paul is saying that here. Okay? We got a wealth of history about food and drink. So he reminds him, he says, well, do you know what event he's referring to here where they ate and drank and did all these things? Do you know what Old Testament story he's referring to? Anyone got this so far? Yeah, Manoah. It's the Exodus, right? It's the Exodus and the wilderness, okay? So again, if you don't have any clue what on earth that story is, Paul's saying, well, you might be unaware of a few things that can easily trip you up. Okay, so God's people in the past were baptized. They ate and drank the food that God gave them. Paul actually even says that they experienced the presence of Christ with them, just like the Corinthians did, and yet somehow they ended up in a catastrophe. Okay? God's people in the past had the same benefits as God's people now, yet for many of them, their story ended in a catastrophe. And Paul says, it's such a typical catastrophe, right? That's why it's an example. It's such a typical thing that so easily happens to people that people get trapped in, even God's own people. Okay? Does that make sense so far? Okay. Kind of. All right. So we'll keep going. Now we're looking at verses 6 to 11. Okay? Now these things took place as examples for us, that we might not crave evil as they did. I repeated that line just as a reminder. Do not be idolaters as some of them were, as it is written. The people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. What a weird thing. We must not indulge in sexual immorality as some of them did, and 23,000 fell in a single day. We must not put Christ to the test as some of them did and were destroyed by serpents, nor grumble as some of them did and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now, these things happen to them. Again, this is a typical example. But they're written down for our instruction on whom the end of the age has come. Now, I'm sure you guys noticed there that Paul twice repeats that the mistake of Israel in the wilderness after the Exodus is typical. Right? You guys saw there? It's an example, he says. And then he says, it's an example. In case you didn't catch that part, he's saying, this is an example. Okay? It's typical. He keeps saying, like, it's so typical. This is so typical. Are you hearing this? Okay? Should this resonate with our lives? Yes, it's typical. And the typical failing that they had in the Exodus is called idolatry. Does anyone know what idolatry is? Okay. To worship an idol, okay? That's the simplest way, to worship other gods. It's typical, Paul says. And then he lists a whole bunch of Old Testament examples of what it looks like. I can't go through them all today because we'd be here forever, okay? So I'm going to stick with one, and just the one that Paul takes the time to quote. You guys see the quotation right there? Paul says, I'm going to quote scripture for you. Here's the best example of idolatry, and it says this. The people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Now, what is that? What story does that come from? It's a direct quotation from a story.
Is that when they're in the desert with
the
idol?
Yeah, which idol?
The cow, the golden calf.
Nice! Mitch! Woo! Okay, gold star for Mitch. Give you a brownie afterwards or something like that. Okay, so That's super good, though, right? You got to know, it's kind of like knowing the children's story. And Paul's saying this story very much applies. So the most typical of all is the golden calf. That's why he takes the time to actually quote that one. So there it is. You're thinking, what the heck does this have to do with anything in my whole life? Okay? There's the bull. It's a bull, right? Golden calf, young bull. So picture the scene here. You guys know the story, okay? But sometimes, because we have it as a children's story, it doesn't really get down to the gritty stuff. So this is Exodus 32. You can mark it down, check it out later. Moses is on Mount Sinai. He's meeting with God and getting God's law. And you think, what a blissful scene. Nothing bad could possibly happen. And it's like immediately in the story, the people are talking with Aaron, and they're like, make us a statue so we can worship it. So Moses handcrafts a golden bull from all their finest jewelry, okay? And then they hold this festival, and they worship this bull. And it says that they ate and drank, and they ate and drank some more, and they had a college frat house party. And the end result was then they had all these children's games, okay? Perhaps you picture this. You know, it's... They were hammered, you know. Next thing you know, they're playing hopscotch. And this is a good time. Maybe they played some marbles. I don't know. But according to Jewish tradition and how they interpret this thing, it's kind of more like they played a game like this. Okay? I'm sure you guys know this game. But this is like the adult version of Twister. Okay? Such as that we shall not speak about in this sermon. But the question is, how did things go south so quickly, right? Moses goes up to get the law. Next thing you know, they're throwing in their jewelry, making a golden calf, and doing all sorts of crazy things. You know, what happened? Why was their first thought, because that's obviously what it is, why was their first thought to make a bull, gorge themselves on food and drink, and then use one another for their own gratification? You ever thought about that? I'm going to tell you why. This is what Paul's saying. Paul's saying, I'm using the story to say, isn't that so typical? Because Paul is saying, it's the most typical thing in the world to slip into worshiping. Power. Right? Isn't that the most typical thing to slip into worshiping? Power. Excess. Self-gratification and pride. I mean, it's not typical for me, but I've heard people can struggle with it, okay? These kinds of things, is that typical? Okay, it's the most typical trap that people fall into, including God's own people. That's what Paul says. It's a typical trap. It's to crave it and to feed yourself on the way of the bull. Okay, so that's what I'm talking about with this worship of the bull. It's the way of the bull. The difference between us and them, let me say this, okay? This is what Paul's getting across to you. The difference between us and those people that worship the bull is not that we don't long to worship the bull. Okay? And it's not that we don't have ways in which we worship the bull. The difference is they were honest enough to make a giant statue, hand carved, and just say, that's what I'm doing with my life. Yeah. I'm just being honest about it. Going the way of the bull. So it's like Paul is saying to them through this example. Now, we know he's using why this framework thing, right? He's coming at them sideways with the framework. And it's like he's saying to the Corinthians, he's saying, listen, let's be honest. We looked at chapter 8, you don't have love. We looked at chapter 9, you just want to stick to your own rights. So what's going on here today with regards to the temples? He's saying, why do you really want to eat at the idol's temple? You want to do business, you want to make contacts, you want to maintain friendships. But why do you want to do that? You want to do it for the most typical reason ever. Power, excess, self-gratification, and pride. What is it going to do to other people for you to go there? You don't care. Okay? You only care about your rights, your status, and your own gain. Okay, and the question is, what is feeding that in you? Is it taking communion? Right? You ever take communion and then just think, oh, I feel so rowdy. You know, I just want to go and dominate somebody. Okay? Is that what you think? Paul's saying this isn't the way of Christ, because this meal is about giving your life away for the sake of others. So where did they get this other way from? It's feasting on the way of an idol. You see, the fact that Paul, in talking to Christians, has to remind the Corinthians to actually think about other people before they act, and quit merely thinking about what they have a right to do, and perhaps actually have a thought towards building somebody else up, it shows what kind of food, what kind of fuel they are fueling their worship with. Simply put, they are filling themselves with a bunch of bull. Okay? That's the easiest way to say it. Okay? This way of craving and consuming and fueling ourselves on power, excess, self-gratification, and pride, Paul's saying, man, that's so typical. It was typical in the Exodus. It was typical in Corinth. And Paul says, that way is a catastrophe. Do you see that? So my question for you, because you're Christians here and the Corinthians were Christians, is what is actually fueling your way of life? Because Paul says, listen, you can eat at the Lord's table, but in the end, when it comes right down to it, you can actually be filling yourself with a bunch of bull. Okay? And you notice Paul used that word to desire evil as they did. It's the word to crave evil as they did. And it's a food word. Okay? So the question is, what kind of food do you crave? Because along with this food is a way of living. Okay? So what kind of food do you crave? God's way or the typical way of the bull? What's fueling the direction of your life? Again, God's table is about giving our lives away for others. Though they hurt me, I give my life away. Is that what's fueling your life? Or is it the table of the bull, the table of vengeance and grudges and getting mine no matter what the cost? Now, just so you don't feel too much pressure on yourself, I'll talk a bit about me, okay? So I had a realization the other day that I'm feeding myself on all this typical stuff. I realized it at the point when someone said something to me that I really didn't like. You know, it hurt my feelings a lot, and I'm like, this isn't true. It totally bothered me, and at first I responded really kindly, you know, because I'm a Canadian pastor. And I was like, no problem, you know, it's no big deal. And then they said something again, and came back at me and said something terrible. And so, you know, I didn't want to crush them instantly, so I was like, I'm going to say this half nicely, and the other half, you're going to put, you know, read between the lines, and it's not nice. Okay? So you just know. And then they bothered me a third time, and you know what they say about this thing about bulls? You mess with the bull, what? You get the horns, right? And I thought, this one was over text, because those are the worst ones. And I'm like, I'm going to text this person into oblivion. And Mark Wolf was there, and he's a better Christian than me, so he helped me out. But in that moment, I realized, you know, I got to ask myself, you know, I'm looking at this passage, and I'm thinking, how much bull is in me? The worship of power and self-gratification is way more subtle than you think. None of you are going to have to face, should I worship a giant golden bull or not? Okay. But you will have to decide if you want to go that way. It's the same thing. They're just more honest about it. Okay. So as a pastor, you know, I feel it's extra responsibility to not just lose it on people all the time. I miss that about sales. You know, you could do that whenever you wanted. It was way better. And, I think that's probably a good thing. But many times when I'm a pastor doing the nice, gracious thing, and you know, that's what sucks about talking about grace, because then you got to try and do it, and people are trying to hold you accountable. Okay, but I long to do the bull thing. I want to use power and give someone what they deserve for once. You can know what I'm talking about? Okay. At least, you know, what I determine that they deserve. And I'm thinking, yeah, okay, I'll do the nice thing this time, but I won't do what's in my heart. But then afterwards, I'm going to go home and I'm going to watch the movie Taken. Have you guys ever seen the movie Taken? It's one of the many Liam Neeson movies that are exactly the same about vengeance. Okay, maybe I'm going to watch this vengeance movie the whole for five times when I'm home, you know, and I'm just thinking, oh, just, I love that. You know, wouldn't it feel so nice to blow up that person's car? Right? That's why we love the movie. It's like, finally, someone blew up that guy's car. He's bad. In his newest movie, he drives over the car with a snowplow. That's how ridiculous it is. And I still want to watch it because I'm thinking that would feel so good. Okay, but in all seriousness, maybe I'll just talk behind that person's back and destroy them through 1,000 cutting words to every single person around me. And all the while, I won't be honest with myself, and I'll pride myself on my ability to be gracious because I didn't say anything to their face. Heck, maybe the other people around me might even justify me in doing it and say, yeah, how could they do that to you? And my desire for vengeance and me and my rights just grows. And love the person that hurt me? That's for wimps. You see, it's easy to kid ourselves. It's easy to think that we have it all figured out and we're headed in the right direction. And all the while, we allow ourselves to crave, feast, and fuel an idolatrous way in us. And Paul says, listen, you got to be honest with yourself. Because if you're not honest with yourself, you're going to be especially susceptible to this temptation. Notice what Paul says next. Therefore, let anyone who thinks that he stands take heed lest he fall. No temptation is overtaking you that is not common to humanity. Okay? He's saying this is the common thing that everyone's struggling with. Okay? You got to be honest with yourself, because at the point where you think, I'm fine, there's none of this in me, how could these Corinthians be going through this? You know, I don't have any of these ways in me. Paul says, you better watch out. You think you stand, you might fall. So let me use myself as an example one more time here. You might think, Ryan's such a nice pastor guy. You know, he doesn't get tempted with power in his own selfish gain. And that means you're really close to me and actually know me, right? But I don't believe I've told this story here. And if I have, sorry, you can't really interrupt it because otherwise my sermon won't make any sense. So when I first started here at Church of Christ, it didn't take long until there was voices that grumbled against Alan. Okay? And those voices came and found me. And I really liked listening to those voices because they thought I was awesome. And those are my favorite kind of voices. The crazy thing was, they thought I was better than Alan. And I listened. And I took it in. And I delighted in it a little bit. Then one day, after delighting in these things for a long time, I came to my senses and I thought, what is happening in my life? You know those moments where it's like you just see yourself in the mirror and you're thinking, gosh, I'm handsome, but there's also these problems, okay? And the truth is, I love Alan. I really do. I think he feels it. He's like my spiritual British father, you know? And you always want to make him proud, but because he's British, he never says any encouraging things out loud, right? And so you just keep going at it. Okay? And here I was with this father figure of mine grumbling behind his back. You notice Paul says, grumbling right? Grumbling behind his back, inflating myself and feeding and craving and fueling this. You know what that's called? The way of the bull. And you know what? That's pretty messed up. To smile and be kind and to work with someone. Some dude has been doing this for a long time and you gain their trust and only to actively be seeking their downfall behind their back. See, that's serious, bull. Now, the best part for me is the reason why I can tell that story, because you might be thinking, what? What's it, right? The reason why I can tell this story is because I don't have to worry that I'm in this alone, because Paul says that this temptation to crave all of this bull is the same temptation that everyone faces all the time. Okay? It's the temptation is common to humanity. It's the most common temptation. We're all susceptible to it. If you think, gosh, this is in me, I don't want to say anything, don't be embarrassed because it's in all of us. That's what he's saying. And Paul's saying the surest way for your downfall is to say, nope, there's none of that in me. It's just a bunch of bull. Okay? The good news is there is a way out of this. Because maybe you're thinking, there is an overwhelming flood of this in me. Okay? Do I just get beat on here today? There's a way out. Paul says, listen, God is faithful. Now, the cool thing is, you know, you guys know, what's John's big thing? God is love, right? I love that one. It's so awesome. Okay, John's my favorite. God is love. Well, I was reading one guy who was saying, Paul's version of that is God is faithful. Okay? It's a definition of the character of God to Paul. This is Paul's favorite thing about God's character. God is a faithful one. And he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability. But with the temptation, he will also provide the way of escape, that you may be able to endure it. Therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry. Now, I think that this is sometimes a really oddly used passage, like about every single thing in your life. I think in context here, Paul's saying this is about escaping idolatry. Right? You guys can see that? Have we brought that thing through? So you know, I'm in that situation with Alan, and I'm craving the power that voices are saying I could have, and I was letting that all in. And in the midst of that, what causes me to come to my senses? Right? Why don't I just keep going that way? It's because God is faithful. He doesn't say, hey, Ryan, that's what you chose. Well, I guess you better get your act together. See you later. When you decide to pull it together, I might come and talk to you again. Okay? I'm in the midst of this. I'm seeking it. It is terrible. It's wrong. Let's not lighten that thing up. And in the midst of that, God still speaks to me because he's faithful. And he taps me on my shoulder and says, listen, I think it's time to change. God's not going to leave you at the time of your trial. That's why we always have the ability to overcome the most typical of temptations. Though the bull seeks to overtake us, and though it's such a typical downfall for humanity, God doesn't leave us alone. He's faithful even when we're not. And Paul said he keeps trying to give you the way out, right? Now, this passage actually has the most obvious way out ever. You don't have to be ingenious for this. This is the way out. Run! Right? Therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry. Paul's like, the exit strategy is not complex here. Run! Okay? This is the thing. When I'm in that situation with Alan and I realized what I was doing to him, this is what I had to do. I had to go and tell him. I had to go and confess it to his face right away. You think that's easy? Have you seen Alan's face? Okay? Sometimes Jen's like, I say, I'm gonna ask Alan this question. I tell Jen, then she says, well, what did Alan say? And I think I've said this to you guys before. He's like, nothing. He just looks at you. Right? And you're like, what the heck is happening? And how do I read this? Okay? And he's got a really powerful presence. So I'm thinking, how do you say to Alan's face, hey, I stabbed a knife into your back? Okay? I'm going to tell you how you say it. You say it right away. You don't think about that. Otherwise, you'll never do it. Right? Because I'll start thinking about self-protection and how I'm actually in the right anyway, and really, Alan's a scumbag. Right? And all this bull starts coming up. Okay? You don't give it a second thought. You flee. You, in this case, run towards Alan and just say, this is what happened. I got to hurry there. I got to act immediately. I have to cut off this feasting and fueling way of idolatry. It's there. We need to admit it. It's tempting. It's the most typical downfall of humanity. And it affects our relationships. Can we admit it to ourselves in that it's in us? Maybe for some of you, that's with your spouse. You know, and you've been thinking about, I'm justifying why I'm in the right here. And my thing is this, stop it. Just say you're sorry. Flee the way of the bull. It's not going to work out for you. It's a catastrophe. Maybe it's you in a friendship where you're holding the most ridiculous thing in the world against somebody on principle. I do that all the time because principles matter, you know? But really, it's just destroying this friendship, and it's a bunch of bull. Just go and say you're sorry, for heaven's sakes. Who cares? Mark reminded me of this part in Corinthians where Paul says, why not just rather be cheated in your relationship with your brother? Right? This is the easiest Christian thing ever, right? You screw me over, and I think, I'll just be cheated. That's what Jesus would do. Is that your first thought? No. Okay. The way of the bull. Maybe you need to tell your boss you're sorry. That's the easiest person to talk behind their back, I think. Do what you have to do, and do it quickly. That's how you escape from an absolute catastrophe. That's how you escape the way of the bull. I want to end just with this. Why is idolatry so serious? Right? What I've been trying to do is go through pains to show you guys, it's not about worshiping a bull, right? Oh, I don't worship a bull, I'm fine. It's the way. Okay? None of them thought that's what they worshiped. It's the shape. Why pick a bull? Right? Because it's power and fertility. They understand that. It's a way of shaping your life. So why is idolatry so serious? Why does God take this so deadly serious? Because here's why. There is only one God who actually loves. There is only one God who actually forgives. There is only one God you will ever hear about in the history of the world who gives up his own rights and bows down to serve. A God who would humiliate himself and make himself nothing to make people like me that backstab a pastor into somebody who's everything. You'll never find another God who would do it. No other God cares like this, because no one could have imagined a God like we believe in. He's so different from what we typically crave. I don't crave to have people cheat me and ignore it. Why? Because it's the right way, right? I don't crave the right way. This is the way God actually is. If we worship the bull, if we give way to power, it's not some simple thing. You know what's going to happen? We will trample one another. And there's enough of that going on in churches all over the place. We'll use one another, and we'll use one another up. We'll just be concerned for our rights and what we can gain. Right? You just come to church and think, I didn't like that. It didn't fill me up. Can't stand this place. You think, when did it become all about you and what you can gain? Idolatry is the sin of all sins because you become what you worship. And what you worship is not always as obvious as it seems. Paul says God's people in the past were hand-fed by him in the wilderness, but many of them found out that their place was a seat at the bull's table. And if God's own people turn to other gods, then the bull will have its way. Do you think it's going to matter to Grand Prairie if this church worships a bull or Jesus Christ? Because without Jesus, there will be no forgiveness. There will be no grace. There will be no mercy. And our way of love will die. And if it's not abundantly obvious to you in this passage, Paul says, God will not allow that to happen. Because in the way of the church, the way of God is at stake. We are the light of the world. And that's not a battle that God is willing to lose. So I want you to ask yourself seriously. If what you feed on fuels the direction of your life, how much of this bull is in you? You got to be honest with yourself. Be honest. Act quickly. Don't start thinking about it. Do it. And avoid the catastrophe. Amen. I'd just like to say a prayer for us. I don't know about you guys, but this one really got me. God, I want to thank you that you're not just a nice Canadian. You don't say you love us to our face, but really you're seeking our downfall. And you don't desire that these temptations become something that crush us. But you say that you are a never-leaver God who is always faithful, who is always there for us. But in order for us to turn to you, we have to admit to the other things that we've turned towards. God, I just want to pray that in your grace and mercy today that no one here will leave here with some heaviness of guilt and shame on them. That they would just admit it. Admit these ways to come to the loving arms of their Father where all is forgiven. But that way is really set right. Because the world doesn't need more bulls who use people and crush them, God. They need to know a God like you. There is no other God like you. God, I just pray that people will see that in us, that we would be different, and that ultimately they could say, there's no bull in that guy. There's no bull in that girl. They just love. Thank you, God. You are faithful. You are. Even today, even in the midst of our sin. Your name.